Let's go to PS5. And PS5, whenever PlayStation does their showcase, let's just say that they always want to make sure that there's so many games to talk about. I think they started their PS showcase with Final Fantasy 16.
16, yeah. I was
Yeah.
surprised it was I
Yes, like for like when I first heard it, like, wait, what? I thought Final Fantasy games, they are stuck in development
Yeah.
for like half a decade before they talk about it. But yeah, so that was a
It
shock
wasn't
for me,
striking as
and
well.
that was like a good sign.
It kind of like felt
Yeah,
like
it was good.
Actually,
It
kind of felt
was
like a multiplayer. Like I thought, oh, there's gonna be like a new Final Fantasy 14 world or something, because it had that feel. It had that feel. I didn't expect it to be like
Of
16.
course it had the feel of FF14 because Yoshi P himself is behind it.
Oh, so that makes sense. Okay. I said that makes sense. So if it's the writers of Final Fantasy 14 doing it, then duh. That's why I got the feeling that it was like Final Fantasy 14. But then I think it will be subject to a lot of
But
changes
yeah,
and
I'm surprised.
developments.
I'm still Aye, well,
It
you
will
know
come out
Final
in the
Fantasy
next
XV
5
wasn't called
years.
Final Fantasy XV before. But yeah, what's shocking though is FF16 is Sony exclusive. Like they said, that it's PlayStation exclusive. Although the trailer, the gameplay footage that they showed was a PC emulating the PS5 gameplay. That's kind of shocked to me too. Like I remember the last time that Final Fantasy was exclusive to PlayStation, they launched 7, 8, 9, 10 until 12 on the PS before removing the exclusivity and then going to Xbox with 13 and beyond. So yeah, for me, FF16 coming out is a surprise, and being a PlayStation exclusive is an even bigger surprise for me. So that's really strong for Sony. That's a win for their end, since they got one of the best RPG franchises on them, exclusively to them. So yeah, any thoughts on Final Fantasy 16? Maybe trailer or impressions? Because for me, one thing that kind of looks weird different for me is that I think 16 is kind of back to its more fantasy roots, like more kind of medieval-ish
Yeah,
fantasy roots.
medieval fantasy, yeah.
High fantasy roots. So like if previous Final Fantasy titles had a bit more sci-fi into them, this one has more grounded, like
And it's
more
darker too.
classic. Yeah,
It
classic.
like the story is like darker too. If you
People called
compare.
it Witcher. No,
Oh
not
yeah,
Witcher
Witcher.
fantasy.
Witcher. Some people called it Dark Souls too. Like what? It's really it's Well,
a
yeah, it's kind of hard to tell for now since we were only given like snippets of what it looks like in gameplay wise. But I think it's gonna be the same with FF7 and FF15 in some ways or another. People are kind of like wishing it's like they that Final Fantasy would go back to turn-based, but I doubt that's gonna
All right,
happen.
here. I got the meme title. FF16, Devil May Fantasy Wildfront. I'm
Oh,
like, all right.
Devil
Devil
May,
May
yeah.
Fantasy
It
Wildfront. Well,
does feel like a Devil May.
that all right.
Not inaccurate.
If
That's
the
really
combat,
accurate.
yeah, but it's a meme title, of course. But if the gameplay, if the combat is anything like FF7 Remake, I'm sold. Because to be
It's
fair,
good.
I have played. Okay, I'm making sure I can, like, yeah, I've played every Final Fantasy game except five, and so I know where everyone is coming from to say we want them to go back to third base. I'm like, here's the problem though. They finally proved that they found a balance of like tactics in turn-based RPG, but the fast-paced action in more modern RPGs with FF7 Remake. Like, again, I make this joke all the time. FF15 limped
so that FF7 remake can fucking run.
Oh my god, that's true.
Like,
I agree.
Seriously, like, I was very skeptical on the very first like combat trailer for FF7 remake. I'm like, wow, they're really sticking with the whole modern combat now, huh? But when I played the demo, I was like, wait, this, it's not supposed to feel this good. Why does it feel so good? I can still feel the tension of like making decisions per turn when they do attacks and stuff. I'm just like,
and the ATV, wow,
they really nailed it this time. So if they just use that formula with FF16, I still think it's going to be a solid title, but they still have a big, big problem. If there is one Final Fantasy title that's drawing attention away from 60, it's 7 Remake Part 2.
Oh my god, yeah. I think the hype, the fact that there's a lot of hype for the next part of the remake, it's gonna hurt 16 in a way. It's gonna hurt 16.
Definitely hurt 16. Yes.
Because the time frame of release is gonna be a big factor. Because if they're gonna release it close to each other, that's gonna suck. That's gonna suck for one game. And that's not Final Fantasy VII.
We already know
remake.
Which it's gonna suck for. It's gonna suck for 16. By default, it's gonna suck for 16.
Well, depends. You never know. Like, for example, if by some chance 16 will be released next year or in 2022, because Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 2 will come out in the next 5 years. I don't think it would be a problem at all. But
well, I think I think if it would depend on the release window, because if the release window is too close, you know which one is gonna flop, suffer more. But and then if you know, if one of them gets stuck, I think one of them will definitely get stuck in development. Development hell at a certain point. I think both titles would succeed, you know. Just keep to their strengths. But I think 16 really has a lot of things to prove, because every Final Fantasy has brought in so much controversy. Like, even the original 7, not many people liked it before back then. Like, not many people were approving its changes, because Final Fantasy has always been a high fantasy setting, a more medieval setting, until 6 and 7 just changed it up, you know, added a bit more sci-fi steampunk element. Then you know, you get the likes of Final Fantasy 10 and 12, which kind of delved into high fantasy a bit more, and then you get 13, which always gets the most intense discussion out of any Final Fantasy game, next to probably 15, which 15 is like, you know, as much as many people talk about the 15's combat, you know, it has its benefits, you know, by being the prototype for Final Fantasy combat in the next games. But speaking of combat, I think Final Fantasy VII Remake's combat is a culmination of a decade's worth of experimentation from Square Enix. Like, I remember they tried real time in Final Fantasy XII, the real time with the active timer, with the ATB style timer. And then they tried to go a bit, I can't remember 13 style. It's a bit confusing
with 13.
Yeah.
I can give a TLDR for FF13. It's very easy. FF13 still has the traditional, you have to wait for the bar to fill, and then you do a bunch of actions. That's really it. You don't control the characters directly.
Yeah, so
it's more traditional. Yeah, it's more traditional Final Fantasy compared to 12, because with 12 you have the Gambit system and you're moving characters around, they're doing their own thing.
You're an AI programmer in 12.
In a sense, yeah. But in FF13, you have one captain and then you have two others. You just change their class made like on the go with the paradigm shift. And in terms of, as you said, controversial titles, yes. But for me, nothing is more controversial than 14, in my opinion.
Well, 14 had to have that huge resurrection, you know, before it went big, you know, before it succeeded. And that was, and you know, 14 is still is arguably one of the best titles on the series all time for me, because you know, it's a huge, it's a very strong community that's been loved so much. You know,
it's no longer standing in WoW's shadow. It's now standing toe to toe with WoW. If anything,
WoW
now has to catch up with FF14 because the momentum of FF14 has never been stronger with the latest expansion. Oh my goodness!
Then I guess we have like big expectations for 16 if the same writers for 14 are doing the project with it. So I think maybe story-wise, sixteen would be something we would be playing. We just have to wait what the gameplay is gonna look like.
Yeah.
I just really wanna get an idea also on the story, because for me, getting the first impression on the plot of a new Final Fantasy game would really set me up if how would I feel, like how hype would I feel, because I'm a guy that has recently just got into Final Fantasy. You know, I've not finished a lot of Final Fantasy games. I've stopped more than completed. So yeah, but 16 is gonna be so much. It's gonna feel so fresh for me. Like it's a great way to create another great Final Fantasy story once more, and I just hope it doesn't. I just hope 7 Remake Part 2 doesn't just bump it and hurt it, because I know 7 is gonna be the title with more hype than any than the next Final Fantasy game. So unless they do something big. So that's Final Fantasy. Next game is Spider-Man. Okay, Spider-Man Miles Morales. So, this is a sequel to Spider-Man on the PS4. 2018 Spider-Man.
The Amazing Spider-Man, yeah.
Yep, and yeah, so it's basically a new Spider-Man story featuring Miles Morales. And as they said, it's not really an overhauled sequel. It's basically... It's gonna incorporate similar elements to the first Spider-Man game, basically the same city, same setting, and except the difference, you know, there's just a new story, new enemies, and a bit, I think, new features for Miles Morales, new abilities. But yeah, for me, more Spider-Man from Insomniac is always a good thing. What are your guys' thoughts?
The new trailer looked nice. Actually, I haven't played the Spider-Man game yet, so I guess I need to catch up. When I first saw it, like the one that they showed in the live showcase, so I think they had. I'm not sure if they had it on the first one where you attack the enemy and then it goes slow mo. Did that happen in one or no?
I think there were a few moments. There were a few abilities from Peter Parker. Yeah, if I remember,
But then when I watched the trailer, they kind of mentioned that the Miles Morales story takes place 1 year after the events on the first game.
Yeah. Okay.
So that means it's happening in the same universe, in the same city, in the same timeline. Unless they have the multiverse thing happening on.
Wait,
is this a spoiler? Oh no.
How do we explain this? Okay, well. Because, basically, the fact that it's set in the same, same time, like, kinda puts a minor spoiler on the first Spider-Man. But yeah, Miles Morales is in the same just to say Miles Morales is in the same universe as Peter Parker in the game. So
it's a spoiler from one. Okay, so we'll not discuss
not
about
really,
that.
Not really the big. It's not really the big thing for one. But yeah, but if you haven't played it and want a fresh look at it, but yeah, Miles Morales is the direct follow up to the first one. And yeah, one thing that strikes me there is it's a PS4 game too. It's also on the PS4.
Yep. So I think they're gonna release. I'm not sure if they're gonna release it at the same time with the PS5 or they're gonna like. I think they're gonna release it with the PS5 because it makes no sense if you're gonna release the PS4 version before they release it for the PS5. But yep. Yeah, I think yeah, it would be good to play it on the PS4 for people who are not going to be buying the PS5 this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about you, Dango? What are your thoughts on Spider-Man?
Alright. Honestly, I did not play the Amazing Spider-Man on PS4, but I did have an open mind when I saw that it was nominated. Well, from the beginning, I was still very open-minded about it. Because I did play several Spider-Man titles on the PS2. Those were hella fun. And again, this game was a AAA title. I think that's the big difference between the previous Spider-Man titles. This is a AAA title. It's a mainline PS4 exclusive. So the budget shows itself in the game. You have really talented voice actors. You have quality motion capture, attention to minor details. Like if you played it, you'll notice that Spider-Man's voice, the way he talks over his comms, changes if you're swinging and if you're not swinging.
Yeah,
like minor detail.
He's shouting while swinging, and if you're talking to him while walking, he's pretty chill.
Yes, yeah. So minor attention to detail, but it feels so good when you play and you notice it. So other than the web swinging, which is always fun, I don't know. I wasn't really drawn to the game, but I knew it was a good game. So when Game Awards 20, was it 18?
18.
Yes. When 2018 rolled around, I wasn't surprised that it was nominated alongside God of War, Red Dead, Monster Hunter, Assassin's Creed, Celeste, I think was the only indie title there, but God bless that game. So yeah, I wasn't really surprised that it was nominated because I knew from the start it was a good game. So no surprise that when they showed the PS5, they had to reveal like, yo, one of the titles here is the sequel, Miles Morales. I'm like, all right, that's cool. Hella cool. Still not going to buy it though, but not because I think it's bad, but I don't know. It's just not the game for me. But if it's the game for you, whoever else, let them have fun. It's okay.
Okay, now from one exclusive to another, since we talked about God of War, and yeah, let's talk about God of War. And the God of War that they showed is a teaser, just a small teaser.
Just the logo.
On what could it be? And I played the first God of War, and I can say that, you know, it's really good. Like, it has that, you know, it's the game that has it, you know, it has that factor that makes you feel that, you know, you're playing something special, and that's that's it. And you know, moving to the Norse mythology setting for God of War really helped.
That was like, genius, by the way.
Yeah, changing the setting and changing the tone of the series from being Kratos being simply just a very angry monster masher, god killer. You get Kratos, the father, you know, a more grounded father who's, you know, you can see the scars of his past, and you know, you can see how he regrets some of those actions, you know, now how he has to become a father, you know, despite, you know, despite of his, you know, he's starting to become a dad, the dad of war.
That's why the game and Corey deserved Game of the Year. They both deserved
it. It's a really special game, you know. I think it's a sequel though. They just said it's a reboot. Yeah. It's a sequel to God of War 3 in a way. And then, you know, if there was one thing that I didn't like about God of War is the ending, because I wanted more. Like, I was sad it was ending that way. And the fact that they teased Asgard there. They teased Asgard in front of you the whole time. Like, you know, where the portals each world.
And then you can't go there because
the portals to each world, and they tease you Asgard in front of you, and you can't get to it, and you can't face any more gods except for you know, any gods beyond what you're facing there. It's just a tease. So God of War Ragnarok is a direct sequel, and you know, for those who saw the ending, you know, it's what's gonna happen, and I'm not sure. It's gonna be really exciting because, you know, you see Kratos, you see Atreus.
Atreus, who's Atreus? I only remember Boy.
Boy. Like, all of the theory between, like, Atreus and with, you know, with Tyr and with the whole, like, Loki thing. It's kind of like, I'm quite excited where they're gonna, like, put
the
story. There's one detail in the ending that really got me hooked. The tapestry. Remember what you saw at the end of the tapestry.
Yes, a lot of theories behind that.
I got goosebumps because I'm like, whoa, this is major character development for Kratos and Boy. I want to see this. I have to absolutely see this. If there's one character I wish we got to see, though, I wish we got to see Kratos' wife in God of War. Faye. I wanted to see Faye because the fact that the dwarves were like, no one wielded that axe better than Faye. I'm like,
come on.
I want to see that in action.
How did they meet? How did Kratos and Faye fall in love? I have to know.
Yeah, like if they're gonna do any form of flashback or any side story to that, please do so. Just give us a glimpse of how Faye used that axe. I think if it's better than Kratos, come on.
Used it on Kratos, and Kratos fell in love.
Like, I don't know if Kratos just used it. You know, he can just throw the axe, get it back. What can Faye do with it? I don't know. Maybe, you know, throw it farther.
The fact that she's a frost giant, I'm pretty sure she can use that axe by default way better than Kratos. Yeah, but that's what I want to see. I want to see to what extent she can use that.
The God of War sequel is really big. It's gonna be so much fun. Like, the hype to it is so much, and you know, of course, you saw in the ending, you saw Thor. You know. And you finally get to go to Asgard, which is probably the biggest realm in that universe, in the Norse mythology setting there. And
realms we couldn't visit. There were a lot. I counted up to like, what, three?
There were like
half,
three
nearly
realms
half.
That you couldn't.
Nearly half the realms they showed you couldn't explore.
Mm. For
because
me, that
of
was
story
the...
reasons.
And Muselheim, if I'm pronouncing it.
Yeah, it's like
it's like, just like a trial, but we're not able to, like, you know, get into its world lore or something.
Yeah, I think being set in Ragnarok, it's gonna be all crumbling down. You know, hey, it's Kratos be in another mythology world where everything is in shambles, so that's gonna be fun.
It's not him who's going to destroy that world, it's his son. It's the boy.
Hey, you know, for Kratos, another day, another mythology.
There's actually, speaking of that, there was a curveball. When I played that game, there was a curveball I did not expect. If you remember the vault, If you remember the vault, the flip, and then you see
Tyr.
The
was
other
Tyr?
Pantheons. Tyr. Yeah, Tyr. And just you see the other Pantheons. I'm like, would they dare bring the other mythologies into the formula? Either way, if they do, I have to see this.
There's also a theory that Tyr is actually Kratos, but of course,
yeah, because Tyr is the Norse god of war. You know, Tyr is kind of like, yeah. So that means Kratos would have replaced him, kind of. Like, you know, maybe he just arrived.
No,
and,
I guess they'll find a way to retcon that. If that theory that Kratos is actually Tyr, I guess they'd have to find a way. Then why does he not know he's Tyr? You're telling me he has amnesia or something? I don't know.
Well,
but that is a very interesting theory.
There's time travel involved already, since, you know, we already know, like, the world serpent is there from eons before, like, the Ragnarok happened, and the world serpent is actually Loki's son in some kind of weird god
way
that happened.
By the way, am I the only one? Please tell me I'm not the only one here who thinks that the world serpent is cute.
He's a very...
Wait, what's his name again?
Jormungandr.
Jormungandr.
He's adorable. I want to pet him on the end.
That's probably the best one of the best characters in the game for me.
Like, I'm just glad we're not fighting it.
I was half expecting that I would throw my axe to the world serpent, but thank God I don't have to. We actually did. But
what good will that do though?
Yeah, not much, you know, it would just eat you up. You know. But yeah, God of War is gonna be so much fun. They haven't set any release date, so that's gonna take a while. it's another
probably in 2022, probably.
Yeah,
2022.
Because I think one thing that's you know, exclusives, their best exclusives need to release early, and God of War is gonna be one of their big guns. And speaking of big guns, another exclusive is Demon Souls, the remake of Demon Souls. Oh my god.
Oh yeah.
It's a PS5 game. So Demon Souls was the start, you know, was kind of like the start of the whole Soulsborne genre, so to speak, the whole franchise. And you know, I'm not a Soulsborne guy. I have Dark Souls and Bloodborne there. I have to play them soon. But I understand the appeal of those games. The fact that people crave for the challenge, the difficulty, you know, the way that you can master the game. You can master the game and be so good at it that, you know, it's second nature is for me that what makes it appealing. Like, I may not be good at the game, but whenever I see people like enjoying it, seeing how they grind and get good in the game is so amazing. And seeing Demon Souls is as a remake, you know, it's pretty cool. It's from the guys who developed the remake for Shadow of the Colossus. So that's a lot of high expectations for me, because Shadow of the Colossus, the remake, was amazing. You know, they up to a point that you forget that it was on the PS2 sometimes. You know, it feels like an entirely new game.
Well, it brought justice to it. Like, it was way ahead of its time in the PS2. Like, to be honest, it was way ahead of its time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so for me, I think Demon's Souls is a great reintroduction. You know, I think it's a game that has shown its age. You know, the original Demon's Souls is a decade old already, and you know, getting a remake of the game that started it all is gonna be fun. Like, that one is gonna be a really huge exclusive again, and yeah, it's a lot of people will enjoy it. So Any other thoughts on Demon's Souls? Because I haven't played too many Soulsborne games, and this one is kinda, you know, I wanna try it, but at the same time, I know I'm gonna suffer playing through this, but
All right, I
Yeah, I'm
can give
not
you some
interested.
insight because I have played Dark Souls 1 to 3, Demon's
Okay.
Souls, and Sekiro.
Okay, let's
If there's one thing I will say about Demon's Souls is that it is the purest form of a Souls game in both a good and a bad way. All right, like it was one of the first, well, not first, I'd say one of the earliest applications of like world influence, where your actions, like just how many times you die, how many kills you get, who you kill, what quests you finish, actually affects the whole world itself and the ending and gameplay elements. And it doesn't tell you outright, unlike other games that tell you that, hey, this is a game design, it's a core feature, you should know about it. But Demon's Souls was like, lol, it's a feature, but you won't know until it hits you in the face. And again, when I did play Demon's Souls, the one thing I did notice was like, whoa, this game's incredibly hard. Like the very first boss was not meant to be defeated in the first place. But like the naive gamer I was, I'm like, no, I have to beat this boss. I have to beat this boss. If I beat this boss, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna unlock something cool. And what did I unlock? A cutscene where I get one-shotted by a dragon. I'm like, well, okay, thanks for the reward, FromSoft. But if there's one thing I'm confident about Demon's Souls, like remastered or whatever they're calling it on the PS5, I just want them to keep everything that was good about its first iteration and maybe tweak out the buggy stuff of its first iteration. Because again, FromSoft just knows how to make challenging games. And in my opinion, Sekiro is the best Souls game, even though it's the least Souls game out there. Because they just It, that game showed me a lot of things. Like, they showed me that a FromSoft game can be very action-paced. It can feel good. It can be colorful. It's not just black, white, gray, and poison everywhere. No, it can be colorful. It can have very interesting characters, etc. But yeah, if there's anything I want from Demon's Souls Remastered, I just want it to be the best form of what it originally was in the first in its first iteration. That's really it.
Just as long as it, you know, it's visually better and like just a bit smoother, maybe. Like it's gonna be just a solid game. Like I don't think they really need to change too much, you know, just update everything to next gen standards and release it, you know, almost a similar way. So it's gonna be big. Are other games on the P Oh, okay. I think we can talk about this. We can also talk about Hogwarts Legacy because it released on the PS5 showcase, and yeah, it's an open. It fi they
Tug of
finally
war,
announced
but
it.
on console.
They finally announced it. You know, it's been leaked since last year. Warner Brothers had to take down some of the leaks on YouTube, and then you know, now they're releasing it. It's Hogwarts Legacy. It's an open world Harry Potter game set in the 1800s. So that's the gist of it. And yeah, finally, it's been years since there's been a Harry Potter game in general. Like
PS2, PS2 was
the
the last,
Harry
or
Potter
PS1? I'm
game.
not sure.
There's Lego Harry Potter, which is
Yeah, but
oh, you know,
that
Lego
doesn't
games are
count.
pretty nice, but yeah, at a lot of people's eyes, it's not really a pure game based on Harry Potter, you know, it's a Lego Harry Potter game, so it's kind of toned down. But yeah, apart from the movie games, yeah, you don't apart from the movie games, you don't really get too much in Harry Potter except for Quidditch World Cup or other spin-offs.
Oh, good Lord, Quidditch World Cup. I remember that. I had so much fun with that game.
That's pretty much the mo probably if there was a title for the most underrated Harry Potter title. Quidditch World Cup probably is on top of that. But yeah, Hogwarts Legacy. Hogwarts Legacy is, you know, the kind of like the Hogwarts fantasy you've been living, you know, you've been wanting to have on next gen, in next gen form. So of course, I guess this, since this is open world, you have your own choices.
The best creation.
Yeah, the most exciting part would be character creation and choosing your and getting sorted. You know, getting sorted in your house. So you'll finally find out.
Do you have like the freedom to like choose your house, or they're gonna like send you some questions and then they actually put you in the house that you're supposed to be, but not something that you would choose for?
Okay, I hope they do the question thing, because I would rather not expect which house I am yeah, in, rather than getting to choose outright. But I think a lot of people might get pissed if their questions and the way they answer doesn't get them to the house they want. But you know, but for
you're
me,
gonna manipulate it.
Yeah, for me, going blindly into that part of the game is gonna be better than knowing where to go, because you know that's the best part about open world games sometimes, or open world RPGs. You know, you get those choices that change things up, change the smallest narrative to something, and I really hope Hogwarts Legacy does that, you know, more choices. And I hope you get to classes. You get to classes regularly. You get to experience each subject in Hogwarts. Wait. Okay. Here's a thought. Hogwarts Legacy is just a bigger magical version of Bully. For me.
Speaking of
franchise that could use a resurrection of sorts. A sequel.
Yeah.
Sorts. But like, yeah.
Bully was a more, I'd say, because they had to tone down the violence, Rockstar had to make up for with other aspects, which is the whole school life simulator thing. So I hope that with Bully 2, if ever we do get it, but I hope to Christ we do. I hope with Bully 2 we get to experience that again, but in like a university this time. That's such an interesting concept.
College mode. So I think, you know, I kind of hope Harry Potter has that. You know, you get to experience classes from Hogwarts. You know, I know they're going to add a few anomalies to Hogwarts, because no Harry Potter universe... story would not be complete without having something bad happening to Hogwarts, you know, something that screws up the whole school year for you. And you know, I really hope this does well. I really hope it plays well once it releases, because it's a game that a lot of people are waiting for, and you know, it's a game with a lot of expectations as well. So yeah, that's my thoughts on Harry Potter.
Podcasting is growing very quickly, not just in the Philippines, but also worldwide. There's a whole lot of voices out there, and we as podcasters need to stay informed in order to stay relevant. The best way to do that is with data. And the best way to get it all in one place is Podmetrics, your one-stop shop for all your podcast data needs. Podmetrics aggregates data from Anchor, Spotify, Chartable, Facebook Live, and YouTube in order to show you the real picture of how your show is doing. And when you know your show, you can grow your show. The best part is it's absolutely free. Sign up now at podmetrics.co and don't forget to use the referral code GeekyJuanz. That's Geeky, J-U-A-N-S. Podmetrics, the only analytics you'll ever need for your podcast.
What else did they release? Did they release Resident Evil Village? Another trailer for it?
Another trailer.
Yep.
Not much. Like,
oh man,
I'm not sure if they showed some gameplay, but more on the story and like the environment that you're going to be in. So it kind of got me the feels of like Resident Evil 4. So I think they're gonna go with that formula.
Yeah. I hope I don't have to shoot the Lago again.
Oh no.
But yeah. Yeah, okay. Oh, wait. There's one game that I would kind of interested. Deathloop. It's an FPS game where it's kind of unique. It's from Arkane Studios, I think. So it's a Bethesda shooter. So it's a shooter with time travel elements, and whenever there's an FPS with time travel, I always want to delve into it. When there's FPS where, you know, there's a story that involves, you know, you going back in time, manipulating time, it's always fun. So yeah, just a quick thought on Deathloop. It's a shooter where your goal is to kill 8 assassins. They state that outright. Your goal is to kill 8 assassins in a single, like, kind of in a single Deathloop. So you have to strategize your way and, you know, make you assassinate every one of them before your time, before you get eliminated yourself. And I think there's also that aspect where, apart from that experience, there's also another character that would try to interfere with you. I'm not sure if it's multiplayer or it's also a single player aspect where, you know, there's just gonna be one character that's just annoys the hell out of you. But for me, if there's a next gen title that I wanna try first, I think it's Deathloop because it's new. It's something different for me. And then it's an FPS, and there's no FPS game. No other new FPS game announced on the PS5 that's Call of Duty. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on Deathloop. And I think, other than that, that's pretty much it. Oh my god. Okay, Horizon Zero Dawn, yes. Okay, Horizon, the Forbidden West?
Forbidden West, yeah. Or okay. Wilds, I think. West.
Okay,
so if I recall correctly, the first Horizon Zero Dawn was kind of in the east coast of the United States, Boston, mm-hmm. I can't remember. So now they're going in San Francisco, maybe California. They're basically going California on the Forbidden West. And this is a direct sequel to Horizon Zero Dawn. Follows up on the ending, which is pretty good, like the way they teased how it ends. It's kind of like how God of War's ending happened. You know, it just teased the sequel. Hey, you enjoyed the game so much. Guess what? There's another game coming soon. But yeah, I really enjoyed Horizon Zero Dawn. I loved the open world, and I loved how it built the world. The world building there was good. You know, how each side quest made you feel that, you know, how it established the world in front of you. Like, you know, Aloy is a character that's just got out of her comfort zone, so to speak, and, you know, exploring the world ahead of her. And yeah, I really liked it. And killing machines there is the best thing. Like, there's no better feeling than taking down a lot of them, taking down the largest machine after 30 minutes of fighting it, you know. There was this one time I spent 15-20 minutes killing a series of monsters and felt satisfied at the end. So yeah, Horizon Zero Dawn, Horizon Forbidden West is coming. So any thoughts on those guys, Danica and Dango?
I was very happy with the first title, but to be frank, I have been monumentally spoiled by Ghost of Tsushima. Just because of like the non-intrusive UI, the color, the photo mode. If an open world game doesn't emulate at least some of that, it's so hard for me to get into.
Well,
so yeah, but although Horizon Forbidden West does look really cool, quite frankly, there's one title I'll mention it later because I want to hear Danica's piece about Forbidden West. There's another title on the PS5. I haven't seen that style on the PS in years, which is why I'm more interested about it in particular. But on the topic of Horizon Forbidden West, if you enjoyed the first game, I think you can be confident you'll enjoy this one.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a strong. So yeah, that's...
Yeah. But again, for me, coming from someone who, during the time window of Ghost of Tsushima's release, I did not shut up about that game. Like, I love that game to pieces. I've been spoiled by it. But yeah, Danica, what do you think about Forbidden West?
Okay, when it was first announced during the PS5 announcement, I didn't think it was Horizon Zero Dawn because it was the last trailer to be seen in the show. So I was just rummaging on my phone. Oh, it's the last trailer. I wonder what it is. And then when I heard like the same voice actor, I was like, what? No. They didn't release it like that quick. Like since when did like Horizon Zero Dawn like?
It's a 2017 title.
Okay. So that was a long time. But I'm actually really excited about it now that it's gonna be a larger and probably a broader world than one. Because when I played one, I was really dumbfounded with how big the game was. Like the map, when you go to the map, it's like, oh, okay, where else can we go? And everything where it was in clouds. So with the adventurer and RPG fan in me, I didn't continue with the main story. I really like went on an adventure, went all around, did some side quests. And I did those side quests when I just came out of the Nora village. So when I came out of the Nora village, I didn't go to the next story. I went on and on until I was able to like explore everything that I can explore in the map. So when the time came that I'm supposed to go forward with the story, I was already max leveled. So the mission on outside, the first mission that you have to go on after Nora Village was for a level 12 mission. And I was already level 50 something.
That's the best feeling.
Yeah, that's the best feeling. That just goes to show how much I was so immersed with the world that was presented in Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, it was limitless. It was endless for me. I kept on exploring. And I'm expecting that would also be happening on Forbidden West. I hope it's going to be a bigger world with like more freedom to like explore, loot stuff, you know, be overpowered by the time you go and continue the main story. And I actually love the glitches that, you know, you can do within the game, like jump into the highest corners of the mountain, try to defeat some robot dinosaurs, and they can't reach you because they're not coded to reach you from that kind of height. So yeah, I'm practically really excited for Forbidden West. I have high hopes for it, and I'm sure they will not disappoint. Guerrilla Games will not disappoint.
That's actually true, yes.
Okay, well, I think that's it for the exclusives for the games, and then now we can do the quick comparison of each console. So I think we can start with hardware now. I think hardware isn't really too much of an issue because for me both consoles are almost as equally powered. Yeah. Of course, in Xbox always has that slight power advantage that gives them the edge graphics and performance wise. But yeah, apart from their size, apart from the, you know, the resolution, it's the same. They both have 120. They both have 120 hertz, so they can. Mm-hmm. They have 4K support. They have 8K support, and they have 1 terabyte. They both have SSDs, which means, you know, you get faster loading times, and smoother performance. And but yeah, beyond that, for me, you know, hardware isn't too much. I think the important thing is the controllers. I'm not sure if there's anything different with Microsoft's with the Xbox controllers, but the PS5 for me has so many different things.
Yeah. Like the
haptic feedback. So your controller gives you a lot of things, gives you a lot of feels, basically. Like a lot of you know, every action, you can feel every action in your controller, which is kinda fun. Kinda different for PS. But in my opinion, okay. The last gen controllers for me are probably the best controllers yet for me. The PS4 and even the Xbox One controller. The Xbox One controller, even as a guy who's a PlayStation guy, I have to admit the Xbox One controller is just really good.
It feels
good.
Really like, good.
It's so I don't know. It's just it's the ideal controller for almost any game. Like it just feels so perfect at some point. And but yeah,
both, I would like to make a retort though.
But
as a person who has a Switch, I think the Pro Con is the best controller of the generation.
although they said I want to try the Pro Con because I've heard so much good stuff about it, and it looks really comfortable. But basically, last gen controllers are some of the best controllers ever because, you know, it just feels right. Everything works properly. Nothing, they didn't do anything drastic that would affect your experience, except for the PS4's touchpad, which was barely used in any game. But yeah, the weight of the controllers feel good. The responsiveness is solid. And I think they're just gonna stick to their strengths. You know, PS5 is gonna have the DualSense. And I know Xbox is gonna stick to their guns and make sure that their Xbox controller is just as solid as it ever was. Maybe remove the AA batteries, please. Because that's the only thing I have gripes with the Xbox controller. Like, it still uses AA's. So yeah, what are your thoughts on the controllers, guys? I think we can start with Danica.
I have no experience. I've tried the Xbox controller once, and it's quite new to me since there's a lot of buttons and it's bigger than the DualShock that we know. So I can't comment much about that, but for the PS5 one with their newest controller, yeah, I the one I'm looking forward to is to experience the haptic feedback that they're talking about. From one of the shows, I think they mentioned something about the haptic feedback where you're able to feel like how hard it is for your character to like with the bow and arrow, how they're gonna attack it. You will really feel the pressure of drawing that bow back, and then when you release it, you kind of get the sense of you drawing that bow. So I forgot the term, basta parang titigil, like something's really gonna make you wanna like press it really hard because something is really pressuring you to. So I think there's gonna be something like that, and I want to experience it like for real, because that's gonna be like, it's gonna change a lot in terms of immersion gaming, especially since it's not, the controller is not connected by a cord. It's all done in Bluetooth. So that's something that I'm, yeah, that haptic feedback, yay.
Pretty much. So yeah, okay, how about you, Dango?
All right. Out of all the controllers that I had to try this generation, if I were to rank it from like, all of them were good. So I'd say good, better, best. I'd say the PS4 was a good controller. The Xbox One was the better one. But for me, the best, I think, is really
Switch.
The Pro Con. The Pro Con controller just feels so good. Because if there's one thing I noticed, there's a finish on the left and right grip where your palm would be. There are tiny little holes. And I don't know, I guess that allows your palms to breathe more as you play. And there's one thing I love about this is that it feels just right. It's not too heavy. It's not too light. Button feedback is just as you want it to be. It's not overly responsive. And the battery life. My goodness, the battery life of the Pro Con is what shocked me the most, because I could be, when I played FF7 Remake, I was so engrossed in that game. Like in the middle of a fight or while I'm exploring a portion of Midgar, I'm like, PS4 controller, no battery. Fudge. Okay, you know what? Luckily, I always have another controller fully charged. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll bring this out, charge the one I'm using right now. But when Switch launched, I bought a Pro Con because I knew I'd be playing Breath of the Wild like a long time because it's a Legend of Zelda game. And not once in the middle of like a binge or a really long playthrough did I have to plug my Pro Con to the Switch to charge it. Like, not once. It has a, I don't know how, but it just has a really long battery life. It just really does. And that's why, that's another thing. But the reason why I think Xbox B is like, if not the ace for this generation, is that with more and more games on the PC having controller support, obviously because it's on Microsoft, it's designed to support Xbox controllers. Not to say that you cannot use PS4 controllers or a Nintendo Switch controller on your PC, but if you want to avoid having any compatibility issues, especially with games that were not ported from a console, obviously having an Xbox controller is the way to go.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that's the controller things. Okay. Yeah. So PS5 and the Xbox controllers are going to be so good. Oh, one thing that I think I'd like to share with the PS5 DualSense. I'd like to know how it would feel when you throw Kratos' Leviathan Axe on the DualSense compared to what you felt on the DualShock 4. Because if the haptic feedback is gonna make you feel different, make it feel different, you know, like make your actions feel more impactful and meaningful, and yeah, I wanna see and feel how the Leviathan Axe would just,
So what, whenever you press triangle to call it back while you're holding the controller, you can actually feel the
vector. Yeah, whoop.
Yeah. But just a warning.
If it brings my controller back, I think that's immersion right there. Although I lose a controller, I'm one controller poorer after that. But yeah, that's gonna be fun. Okay, now let's talk about the pricing. Pricing is a bit of a, both standard models are $499, no argument about it. But the big factor is the digital versions of the next gen consoles, because Series S is $299.
Yeah.
And the PS5 digital is $399. Yeah. And basically that means that, you know, -$100 on with minus the disc drive. So for me, yeah, that's kind of, if we're talking about the digital editions, yeah, the Xbox has the slight price, has a good price advantage, because, and it's way more affordable, which gives it a good, yeah, gives it that edge, so to speak. Because, yeah, the PS5 and Xbox Series X have that standard price point, but if with more people going to digital, that $100 price difference is gonna be huge. So what do you think about it? Danica, let's start with you.
Okay. Actually, for me, it really depends on the player, on the games that he or she would play. So even though like the Xbox series, the small one, the stove one, costs like $299, and the digital one for the PS5 is like $399. It really depends if they're willing to pay for the PS for the PS price, if the games that they want are there. But if the games that they want are on the Microsoft side, so I think it will be fine. I've never had that problem in terms of pricing, because no matter what price each both the consoles show or release, I'm always going to buy PS PlayStation, because all the games that I want are in PlayStation. I've never really been an Xbox fan, but I guess for people who are really going for the digital side, I think that the Xbox One the Xbox digital one has a more advantage to it, being like it's only $299. So that's like how much in pesos? How much is it?
15K?
Yeah, 15K. Actually, it's not that much of a difference. If it's 15K for the Xbox stove, and then the digital version of the PS5 is around 19, and then the regular PS5 is around, and the Xbox is like 25K. It's not really that big. I mean, for me, I'm not sure for you guys if that's like a big difference in price point, but I guess it really boils down to the games that you really want to play on the console. I think that's, aside from the price, it's really the games. The games are the top choice when you're deciding on which console are you going to choose this holiday. And that's just my opinion.
It's this holiday. Okay, how about you, Dango?
Well, in terms of pricing, it's just nice to see how the pricing did not breach the 30K mark. That would have been very, very scary.
Yep.
It's just nice that consoles are maintaining that.
No, I was so scared this generation.
Yeah. It's just nice to see that consoles are maintaining that 15 to 25K range of price. Like that's good. I hope they stick with that. As for like the base and digital, I would say it does play a factor today, because if there's something that quarantine gaming has shown us, is that if people do have the means to buy games digitally, especially now, and that is a very viable option. And so when they introduced like more affordable versions of these consoles, but they don't compromise in performance. It's just that you can only get digital copies of a game. You cannot get physical copies on the digital-only console. But if that's a price and investment you're willing to bet on, well, go ahead. And for me, I have been buying games digitally a lot, because I just don't want to deal with lining up anymore when buying a game. Could you imagine the day like God of War, Ragnarok, or Resident Evil Village comes out, or Miles Morales? Could you imagine the line and want more FF16? I was there on the day FF15 released on the PS4. There was a line. So imagine when FF16 goes out. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a line for that. If I can avoid it and the price is like, you just have to digitally get it, okay, sure. And if there's a practice that games have taken right now is preload. So about a week or so before the release, the platform will allow you to preload the game so that you're ready to play literally when the clock hits midnight. Don't have to wait anymore.
Oh,
yeah. But the biggest surprise for me in terms of the pricing is definitely the Xbox Series S, because you're literally buying, they just priced their next-gen console on the same price as a Nintendo Switch, the first version when it first retailed for, which is $300. And I'm just like, wow. Now, in terms of pricing, I'm surprised no one mentioned this, but there is one worry: game pricing. The standard right now for AAA games is somewhere in the range of $60. Like, it never, it very rarely goes lower than 60, but it never goes higher than 60. But a lot of retailers abroad have started listing pre-orders for games and whatnot, 70. So I'm like, whoa, does this mean that games are gonna cost $70 now?
It's gonna hurt.
That's an extra $10. And that's why for me, I'm just like, as a person who buys digitally, that's not a problem for me. But imagine people who buy it physically and something happens with the disc. That's $70 down the drain. That's just one of the things. But of course, one of the boons of getting physical is that you can lend it to your friends or resell it for a lower price. So a game that you bought for $70, you'll get $50 back in maybe a month or two after you're done with it. But this whole time that I've been playing video games, not once have I resold a game I've played. So going digital is not a problem for me. And that's exactly what I plan to do. Because when I did look at the digital version of the PS5, I noticed that the absence of the disc drive actually makes it a lot more flat on both sides. Mm-hmm. So what that translates for me is that when I have to pack this and go somewhere, that's a lot of space I'm saving. And pretty sure the weight is going to feel a lot lighter without the disc drive. That's just my two cents there. But in terms of pricing, console pricing, these are good prices. Yep. But again, the biggest fear for me in this generation is the game pricing. Mm. We might hit a new standard instead of $60. Might be 70.
Oh my god, can you imagine 4,000 pesos for just the game? Like, imagine how much the collector's editions are gonna be. I'm like, oh no.
Okay, because 4K is at least a deluxe edition for a lot of games right now. But now the deluxe edition pricing is the standard pricing, that's gonna hurt.
That's so very
deluxe
scary.
Edition could be 5K. That's like one third of an Xbox Series S pricing, like.
Oh my god! Essentially, it's true. Yeah.
Yes, that's one of the biggest fears right now.
Like,
for me,
well, game pricing is really.
The next edition for Final Fantasy 15 was 7,000.
Imagine if it's next gen. that's gonna go up by like 2-3K. So that's Okay, now. Now that's a concern that people have to look into, because games becoming more expensive is gonna hurt a lot of gamers, because you're not able to play the latest titles consistently. Like, you really have to choose your purchases. You really have to pick which games are gonna buy for the year. Like, if they're gonna announce 10 AAA games, you're most likely never gonna play all AAA games at that current state. Like, you might be able to do so this current gen, but right now, no, it's not. But maybe next gen, you can't. So yeah, I think it's gonna hurt, because 70 bucks is a lot, you know. It's gonna, that's too much for a lot of people. So, and I guess pricing for digital and physical is gonna be the same as well, no? I think.
Or cheaper.
I hope.
I'm not sure.
I hope digital is cheaper.
Digital
because
and physical?
In terms of digital versus physical, I'm leaning towards digital, because here's the thing. I have the PS4. I still have my PS4. So that means I can still play PS4 discs with no hassle, with no worry that I have to plug it in a PS5. So that's why, you know, and digital for me helps save a bit of space, you know, as much as, although buying physical always has that special sentimental value, and especially those collector's editions are awesome. It's gonna be kind of sad that you wouldn't be able to get those if you're buying digital, but since, you know, since I'm looking, since I found the benefits of digital fun, you know, not having to line up, being one part of it, I think I'm going leaning digital on for this next gen. So yeah, I guess Danica, you're going for physical releases. You're gonna on the disc. Yeah.
Yes, I cannot part away from my physical copies of the game, and of course, I'm still gonna buy for my collector's editions. I'm actually in the midst of like creating my gaming room now, and I'm also building a PC. So yeah, I'm welcoming myself into the PC master race now.
Let's go. Well, I'm trying to be there soon for PC, but yeah. I think that's our comparison for both consoles. So yeah, next gen is looking good. Console prices are pretty good. There's that fear of games becoming more expensive, and you know, subscription-based models becoming the future of gaming. And yeah, but I guess that's it for our comparison. So yeah, PS5 and Xbox is coming this holiday season. November? Am I right, guys?
November.
November, okay.
November 12th, I think, for other countries. How many months? Then for...
That's just 2 months. 2 months.
Yep. And November 16 or 19 for us, for the Philippines.
Yeah. Okay, wait. I'm sinking. It's just sinking in that it's just 2 months left. 2 months until the next gen. Oh, my God.
Are
okay.
you guys buying it on release? Are you going
to... No, not... First maybe game. Not because not I'm on the fence. I'm on the fence because I'm waiting for if there's any issues with the first batch of consoles for both Xbox and PS, because of always there's always something that would hurt first gen. There's always something that would hurt.
My PS4 is first gen though.
Yeah, I mean,
and it still works fine.
Yeah, but yeah, thankfully, current gen didn't have that much issues like the PS3 and Xbox 360 had. So I really hope that upon launch there wouldn't be too many problems, because you know, you don't want your first generation console to have so many wonky issues that would hurt your experience. So yeah, but yeah, with that, that's our PS4 and PS5 comparison. And before we end, I think I would like to ask the question, you know, something a bit of sharing, since we're all in quarantine and we're doing quarantine gaming things. What are you playing right now? Let's share one game we're playing right now, and yeah, and just talk about it. I'll start. One game I'm playing right now is Witcher 3. I finally got into it. I downloaded it last year. I got it last year. I deleted it twice. I re-downloaded it, and I said, you know what? I'm gonna play this game, and I'm gonna try to enjoy it. And to say that once I played it, I'm still playing it right now. It's been the past 3 weeks. I've been playing for the past 3 weeks, and I'm already thinking of doing new game, playing the new game plus mode. So like, I'm gonna start all over again because I got the bad ending for the game, and I'm just finishing off everything. Like, I got the bad ending. I felt so bad. Like, it's probably the first time I've felt so bad in a game ending. Like, I there was a time that I got bad endings in Resident Evil games, but this one hurts. Like all the time that I invested, like it just goes to this ending. Like, oh no, it just it sunk. I felt so down after seeing the ending. That's why right now I'm just grinding my way to the expansion packs of the game and just finishing it because I want to play it again. And yeah, the fact that I finally played this in 2020, despite, you know, the game being 5 years old, is holy crap. you know, Danica, you talked about how big Horizon Zero Dawn is. Let's just say Witcher 3 is bigger. It's an older game,
twice?
But it's bigger.
Like,
okay, here's one thing. There are, in the base game,
oh, the
there are
expansion packs. Yeah.
Without the expansion, with the base game, you get one small map. You get one. Mm-hmm. You get two huge map. You get two small maps and two huge maps, and with the expansion pack, you get. You get another percentage of that main map and then another huge map to come up with it. So basically, you have five. The Game of the Year edition has five different maps to go to. Oh, wait. If you count the palace, if you count the game's palace there, it counts as another tiny, tiny map. But yeah, like, Danica, I was like you in Horizon Zero Dawn. I never left the southern half of the map in the game. And then I thought that, I have to go to the city. In the game, it's Novigrad. I have to go to the city. That means it's another loading screen for the half of the map. Mm-hmm. But when I realized that it's part of the same map, like, wait, what? It was a huge... It's another... I never... Mm-hmm. Yeah. I played the bottom half of the map so much. When I went to the second half of the map, I was, like, just blown away because, hey, this is another map. This is a huge city. Like, there's this city in Horizon Zero Dawn. I had that same feeling. When I went to the main city in Horizon Zero Dawn, I had that feeling that, this game is...
The Sun City?
Like, it's the same thing. I just got to that metropolis with no problem. And then when I played the rest of the game, it's just all good. And now I'm playing the expansion pack, which is another game map. And yeah, it's so fun. About Witcher 2, if you buy Witcher 3 right now, you can get gen version for free. That's what they said. So that's another fun thing. So I hope it's just as smooth as just logging into my account and getting Witcher 3 on the PS5 as soon as possible. So yeah, that's the game I'm playing right now. So I think we'll start with Danica. How about you? What's one game you're playing right now?
I'm currently playing Dragon Quest Builders 2. So I haven't actually. It's also a game that's been in the shelf for too long. Like when I really loved 1. So when 2 was announced, I got it on the first day and I got the freebie of a stamp or something. And then I was hoping to play it like on the day that I bought it. But then I kind of had the thought that I wanted to play it like on the Switch, on the Nintendo Switch. So I didn't open that PS4 game. I wanted to sell it. Like it will be the first game that I will be selling. But then it didn't happen. So I wasn't able to buy the Dragon Quest Builders 2 for the Switch. So when quarantine happened and I was like choosing something that I would like to play, it was still within plastic. So, I'll try Dragon Quest Builders 2. And boy, oh boy, sometimes I forget that it's already 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. in the morning. If you're just going to build a house or like going to build like the parameters around your town, you think that I think this would take me like 15 minutes or 30 minutes at maximum, but then no, it will take you like 2 hours even just by building a house or something, or managing your farm. Yeah, it's a bigger... Have you guys tried Dragon Quest Builders? Not yet.
Not yet. But I know it's one of those builder games that... I think I've played a few building or farming games, so I know those grinds where it just... Where, you know, 15 minutes turns into 3 hours. So...
Yeah. But that's only on two. The farming only happens in two. On one, it's more on the building and then, like, the... exploration and the looting of stuff, attacking monsters. But then on 2, like for example, if one's gameplay is just this high, like the features are like this much, on 2 it's like there's a lot of features in 2 that really can really overwhelm you if you've played 1. It's like twice or thrice the gameplay that you see in 1. So I would recommend, but you can play 2 even if you didn't play 1. So it's a standalone even. So you guys can play it, and it's really like Minecraft, but with RPG elements. Even though Minecraft, there's already a Minecraft RPG, but being a JRPG fan myself, and you know, the love for Akira Toriyama, it's all Dragon Quest builders for me rather than Minecraft. Well, that's the play, that's the game that I'm playing right now, aside from Journey and The Last of Us 2, which I've not yet finished.
Okay. Okay, how about you, Dango? What's one game you're playing right now?
There's one game in particular I think is worth noting that I'm playing right now. It's Death Stranding on the PC.
Oh, man.
That for sure, yes. There's just something about that game that you cannot experience in any other game.
Mine is like, in plastic.
Like, I legitimately feel like I am helping other people play the game, because if you, I'll just TLDR it. See, in the game, which a lot of people have called a walking simulator, which they are not wrong. They're not completely wrong in that sense.
LDC.
But they're not, it's not purely just walking around. There's still some combat, some stealth involved, because there's some obstacles, enemies that you have to overcome as you partake in one of the most intense grab deliveries ever. But you see, when you have to go from point A to point B, there's several obstacles in the way. There are lack of bridges. There are mountains you have to climb. There are certain paths that are very perilous if you don't have certain tools, like, say, ladders or climbing tools, whatnot. And when you do traverse that path, you can leave players hints, like some people do in Souls games, where they leave hints. Death Stranding does that, but they take it to the next level. You can leave warning signs. You can leave ladders, climbing posts, build bridges. You can leave a bike for anyone to use if they come across that path. And there's just so much you can do to help other people, because everyone's probably going to do the same thing you will do and go across the same path. So you may as well help your fellow porter out and make theirs a little easier. And in return, other people will pay it forward by helping you in return as well. And I guess it's the funniest jab at how people value likes in social media, because you can literally leave likes for someone who built a bridge, put a ladder, put a climbing anchor, etc., etc. And it's just so funny, because it's one of the most satisfying things to you know, that every game, whenever you start it up again, it greets you back in some way, right? And Death Stranding has one of the most satisfying ways, because every time I go back, I'm greeted with how many players gave me a like because they used a bridge I built, or they used a ladder I used as a make-up bridge to cross a river, or because I built a safe house in a zone that's in between two really dangerous spots that they have to cross anyway, because that's the only way to get from point A to point B. Etc. etc. That's, I don't know, especially with the circumstances we have now, it's a game that's both therapeutic and fun in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but outside of that, I've still been playing FF14 and Rainbow Six Siege. Those are my go-to games right now.
Oh, nice. Okay, about Death Stranding, how is it on PC? I'm curious, because it just recently released. You know, how's the performance?
Oh boy, it's criminal how it feels so damn good on the PC. Like, there's you can't compare it to the PS4 even on a PS4 Pro. No, I would say if you didn't buy Death Stranding yet, then get it on the PC, because good lord, is this game magnificent on the PC. It's almost, like I said a while ago, it's criminal how well it performs on the PC.
Nice. Okay, so yeah, those are the games we're playing right now, and I guess that's also our recommendations in a way. I guess that's it for our episode. Danica and Dango, thank you so much for joining us again for another gaming episode. Always an awesome time. Thank you for sharing your thoughts for the PS5 and Xbox Series X. And I really, since next gen is coming in 2 months, I'm really excited. I hope we get to experience next gen much sooner than. But yeah, thank you guys so much. And by the way, okay, I think we can start with Danica. What do you have anything to promote?
So hi guys. So yeah, I think just my page again. So so I've been streaming Dragon Quest Builders and Journey. I think I'm trying to finish Journey right now, since it's been a long time since I've actually finished it. So I hope you guys can like go take a look, like if you like what I share. So I try to share some memes about video games. I also have another page which is not really related to gaming, but if you guys are interested on it, it's called the Tarot Shoujo. So it's a tarot reading page. So I read, I do fortune telling with the use of cards, because you know I've been heavily influenced by Cardcaptor Sakura and Visions of Escaflowne. So yeah, so that's something that I'm promoting right now, which is of course my gaming page and my tarot page. So I have Facebook and YouTube as well. So. Yeah, see you guys there. Yay.
Okay. How about you, Dango?
Well, other than my scheduled streams, nothing special in particular to promote. Not really. Just, I guess, like, I'm going to do my usual streams tomorrow at the usual time, which is around noon. Hope you tune in, because I'll be streaming God knows what game, because I haven't decided yet. I have like a list of like, right, I should get around to streaming this again. But that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Okay. Now for us, for the Geeky Ones, you can find us on Facebook where you're watching right now. You can find us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, on Twitch as well. We've been using our Twitch channel to stream a lot of games, and I think I'm gonna declare this on this episode, I'll declare this live. Once I finish Witcher 3, I'll be streaming the new game plus consistently. So yeah, that's gonna be something for the Twitch channel, and yeah, that's it. For our podcast, you can listen to the audio version of this on Anchor and Spotify, and along with Apple and Google Podcasts. There's also Player.fm. So, yeah, wherever you find your podcasts, we're there. And you can also check thegeekyones.com, where we post some blogs, you know, some topics that we'd like to expand in future episodes, or existing topics in episodes that we want to share a bit more. So, but yeah, so this is the episode. That's our next gen gaming episode. And thank you, Danica and Dango. And this is the Geeky Ones. And yeah, we'll see you next episode. And thank you so much for watching. And bye.
Bye. Bye, guys.